Welcome to today's Fire Engineering Zoom Hangout. We have a great show for you today. We also have some sad news that Bobby Halton will fill us in on, but we got two great guests, and we're going to talk about saving the volunteer fire department. We're going to talk about duty nights on call, and we'll cover the controversy of two hatters out there. Our two guests are probably known to most of you. RJ filled in for PJ when PJ had a hiatus for a little while. RJ is a captain in the Rockville Volunteer Fire Department in Montgomery County, Maryland. He's been instrumental in mentoring so many Rockville volunteers and live-ins. He's respected across the country, and he is the president of Capital Fire Training. We also have Christopher Hine on with us today, and I really have to say my condolences because we just lost his father, who was deputy chief of Rockville Volunteer Fire Department, who, when I was a live-in, was a mentor to me. He was bigger than life in a stoic way. When he walked into the room, everybody knew that he was there, but he was very reserved, competent, and he was the kind of fire officer that everybody should strive to be. Christopher, I know your father was proud of you, and we're really glad that you came on. Christopher is a deputy chief in the Rockville Volunteer Fire Department, and he's also a DC firefighter. We have PJ Norwood here with us today, and of course, the boss, the chief, Bobby Halton, if you could kind of fill us in on some of the sad things that are going on in the fire service today.
Well, thank you, Frank. And I hate to start off on a somber note, but circumstances dictate it. Today, the memorial services and final honors are being paid to Heather Schaefer, who led the NVFC, the National Volunteer Fire Council, for 25 years. And she was the kind of person that... she was a quintessential volunteer in her own way. She had a kind word for everybody. She always offered a solution. She always was there to lend a hand. She was mentoring. She was forgiving. She was gracious. She was everything that you'd want someone to be, representing your organization, representing this great calling, the fire service, irrespective of all other considerations. She was just an absolutely exemplary human being. She truly embodied what it meant to be kind and loving, and that's the greatest compliment I think any one of us could ever get, and I don't think it comes any higher. She treated everyone as she'd want to be treated, and that today is so amazing. She was just wonderful. Also, our thoughts and prayers today are with our brothers and sisters and the family and friends of everyone associated with the Spring Valley Volunteer Fire Department. They had a horrible event yesterday, a tragic event yesterday that claimed the life of Jared Lloyd. He was a 15-year veteran of that department. We don't know exactly what happened at this point, but we do know that those departments, there were several departments that responded along with our friends from Spring Valley, are some of the most highly trained, competent, and talented people in the American Fire Service. They love their brother Jared. Their hearts are broken. I've heard from several of the area fire departments, they're reaching out. We don't know any of the details yet as to how they're going to go forward with arrangements, but please check on Fire Engineering. And if you're in the New York, New Jersey area there, I know that they would appreciate any support and anything you'd like to do for them. And so to Jared's family, the Lloyds, our thoughts and prayers, our condolences to the Schaefer family, the same thing, to the Hine family for the loss of your dad. This is what we do, and the fact that we're there in good times and bad, through thick and thin, and it's not the big things, it's the small things. It's bringing a plate of spaghetti and making sure, you know, dropping off a plate of sandwiches, a roast, you know, offering babysitting services so that they can do what they need to do, helping people in and out of the funeral home, all of those little things that folks are doing today for Schaefer, for Heather Schaefer, that we'll do for Jared Lloyd. Those are the things that matter. It's not grand gestures, it's small gestures. You know, the volunteer firefighter that responds to a home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to someone who called because their smoke detector was going off or something happened and they can't manage it. Those are your greatest acts of kindness because those folks need you. And to them, it's an emergency. And so now when we're faced with these true tragedies, remember, it's the small, small little acts of kindness. Those are the ones that matter most right now. It's the hug. It's the prayer card. It's the sympathy card. It's the note from somebody and I'm picking on my friends in Kalamazoo, but it's a classic term. It's the card from Kalamazoo from some firefighter who just wanted to say her heart is broken and she's with you and praying for you. And prayers do matter more than anything. Prayers matter. And so I'd just like to take a moment on this call to bow our heads in a moment of silence for the Hine family and the Schaefer family and the Lloyd family, everyone who knows and loves them, everyone they've ever worked with, everyone whose lives they've impacted and changed. We thank you, Lord, for them. We thank you for what they've done and who they were and how they blessed us and how you're blessing them. And we ask that you help comfort all of them who are suffering at this point right now. Amen. Amen. And now to the volunteer fire service, which is such a wonderful topic. And I can't think of two gentlemen more equipped to talk about where we are today and how you can build a strong organization and maintain a strong organization, because both of you are living that. You're walking that walk right now. Full disclosure, I'm more like an honorary old man in my organization. I show up when I can and I do what I can, and they treat me like, remember Driving Miss Daisy? I'm the official Miss Daisy of the Limestone Volunteer Fire Department. You know, they let me sit in the truck, but I'm not allowed to touch anything anymore. But that matters, and it makes me feel useful. And so I think that one of the things we forget in the volunteer fire organization is that there's a place for everybody, irrespective of how old you get. You know, in career jobs, you can get timed out by legality. You know what I mean? The government can tell you have to go away. But in a volunteer fire organization, you're still welcome to come clean up the kitchen and make coffee and, you know, mop floors and all the good stuff that, you know, we still enjoy doing at the firehouse. So I'll turn it over to PJ and Frank, and I'll chime in as a senior member of a wonderful volunteer fire department, Limestone Fire Protection District number 2 in Oklahoma.
Thank you, Bobby. And thanks for your service. It's important to realize that, you know, we say it, but do we really mean it? You know, the fire service started off as a volunteer organization, and the volunteers just don't get the credit that they deserve. You can be a professional firefighter and be a volunteer.
One point, Frank, and this is important. The American military is all volunteer. The American Fire Service, irrespective of whether you're getting paid or not, is all volunteer. There's no compulsory mechanism that makes you become a firefighter in America. You volunteer to become a firefighter in a career organization, in a combination organization, or a volunteer organization. So as President Kennedy once famously said, we are all Germans, we're all volunteers.
Very, very well said. And it doesn't matter if you respond to one fire or 300 fires a year. We've seen what happened just recently in New Jersey. That card, and we hope it's never played, is in every firefighter's hands, and we do that for the citizens we serve. Now, we have two individuals here from Rockville, Maryland. It's a quiet fire department, and we were talking about it before we went on. They don't really put out on social media all the great stuff they do, and their call volume is unbelievable. This is a fire department that's right outside the Capitol Beltway in Washington, D.C., and I think that they found a way to save the fire department, to save the volunteer fire department. And ironically, Christopher Hines' father was one of the individuals that brought duty nights to ensure the survival of the Rockville Fire Department years back. So we're going to talk about that in a little while. But our own PJ Norwood has stepped out when he was a career firefighter. He recently retired, but when he was a career firefighter, he stepped out to actually make a commercial for Connecticut volunteer firefighters, which took a little bit of courage, political courage, not the fire type of courage, but it took a little political courage to step out and say, you know, being a volunteer matters. It's a way to give back to your community, but the fire department gets so much from it as well. PJ, do you want to talk a little bit about the commercial and show it?
Absolutely, Frank. Thanks. So, you know, Frank, as you are well aware, you know, myself and I started here in Connecticut as a volunteer, actually as an explorer. So I wouldn't be sitting here today talking with everybody if it wasn't for the volunteer department. My department's a combination department. And like Chief Halton said, there's a place for everyone, whether they're interior certified or not. We have a role for all of them because our career staff is just not enough to handle the sheer volume and calls that we do every day. So if it wasn't for our volunteers, I don't know what would happen to my community. So I'm very, very grateful for the volunteer service. A couple of years ago, I was asked to assist a local department in Hebron, Connecticut, with filming a commercial for the volunteers. I figured, I'll show up at a firehouse. Somebody will have an iPhone and they'll do a little interview and, you know, I'll help them out. Well, I was quite surprised when I arrived. They received a large grant through the Connecticut Volunteer Fire Association, received a large grant through the SAFER grant, and they produced a 30, a 60, and a 90-second commercial, all through grants that were broadcast on TV, prime time. I knew, you know, I was taking a little bit of some heat because of my involvement. Some people found out while I was working one evening and my phone started blowing up. It was during a Yankee game. What a beating. And you talk about, I didn't realize the political courage I was actually going to need, because the beating is the career union firefighter helping out the volunteers, and how some people were very upset with that, and having to explain to them that if it wasn't for the volunteers, the people that were complaining to me, they wouldn't be here either, because all of their departments started as volunteer departments. So this is something that I'm pretty proud of. And then to know that this the 60 second commercial actually won an Emmy for PSAs. So I'm pretty proud of it. So I'm going to show the 90 second one, and that will kind of get the blood going a little bit, and we'll go into talking with RJ and Chris, because I'd love to hear what they're doing there. So I'm going to pull over and share my screen here for a minute.
These are those terrifying moments when we try to use technology.
I'm a designer.
I'm a retired VP in business.
I'm a student.
I'm a mother.
I'm a business analyst, and I'm a volunteer firefighter.
You thought we just fought fires?
Firefighters get trained to do so many things.
What we do is serious business.
Three-quarters of the nation's first responders are volunteers. That includes here in Connecticut. And lately, it's been harder than ever, with fewer citizens volunteering.
From teenage cadets like me,
to seasoned veterans like me.
So what are you waiting for?
You ready to make a difference?
Ready to join our team?
Your community needs you. We need you. Visit everydayherocT.org or stop by your local firehouse today and take the first step of joining your fire department. See you out there.
So that was one of the three commercials that aired that I'm pretty proud of. I'm pretty proud of my involvement, but I'm even more involved in the individuals that put that together and continues to run on TV to help the Connecticut Volunteers recruitment. Recruitment and retention is also always an issue. And I think I'm really interested to hear from RJ and Chris and what they're doing to actually retain their members. That's one step that we've taken here in Connecticut to really increase the interest in the volunteer service. And it goes to what Chief Walt was saying. There's a job for all of us on the volunteer side, regardless whether you're 1 year or 15 years or 30 years or more. We have a role for each and every one of those members in our departments, and it's up to us to figure out what those roles are and how to best suit our needs. So I'd like to turn it back over to Frank and to go to RJ and Chris and get their input today.
PJ, that was a great commercial. And again, you don't need had a grant to do that, correct? You don't even need a grant to do that. If you have a local community college, a lot of them have film programs, go reach out to them. They'll love to help you out. Even the local news, say you want to make a quick video for your volunteer service, and they'll help you out. On the political courage end of this, when I was a live-in in Rockville, we had a firefighter who's a Detroit firefighter now, one of the best firefighters I ever worked with. It was John Kay from Michigan, and he was a career firefighter, and he was volunteering. And he would get harassed. And one day they were harassing him, one of the union guys, and he grabbed them and he took them outside and he said, "You're driving a foreign car and I'm from Michigan, and you're going to tell me about being union strong." And they left him alone after that day. So he'd say, "I don't want to hear it." And what the hell? You started off as a volunteer. You wouldn't even been a career guy without the volunteer fire department. So I'm going to start with RJ first, because RJ came from Connecticut to be a live-in in Rockville. And I got to give my brother John some credit. My brother John followed in the footsteps of Jack McElfish, who got my brother John to go to Maryland to live in a firehouse. And then my brother got about 8 guys from Connecticut to go live in firehouses over the year. And when he came back, he decided to be a volunteer. And he was standing outside a fire, and somebody came up to him and said, "You know, you shouldn't be volunteering." He went to work and they harassed him for volunteering. And he goes, "That wasn't me. That was my brother. My brothers are identical twins." So they kept going back and forth because he wouldn't stop volunteering. So RJ, you want to fill us in about Rockville's live-in program and what's going on with it today? But I think it's a great, great tool for volunteer fire departments.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Frank and PJ and Chief Halton for having me on. First and foremost, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell everybody I am a Connecticut boy. Born and raised, I was born in Middletown. That's where I'm from. But I would also like to give a big shout out to the Cromwell Volunteer Fire Department, which graciously took me in as a fire explorer at the age of 14. It was the Connecticut program that actually, when I got into the youth program that they do at the State Fire Academy, where I was able to go in as a 14-year-old and just get a little round robin livelihood of the fire service, which actually sparked my career. Obviously, you know, a lot of people don't know, but my father is a career firefighter in Middletown with the South District Fire Department. So growing up in a fire department family was pretty normal for me. What got me into Maryland was Frank's brother, John, who I was doing a lot of ride-alongs with over at the Middletown Fire Department. And he did a lot of talking about Maryland and the live-in program. It is very normal for us, I guess, but it's not normal for everybody else. So I guess what we'll do is we'll talk about what we're doing versus and a little bit of how we're doing it. But what got me to Maryland was at high school, I was looking for a career in the fire service, but also looking at college. One of the biggest things I wanted to pursue was a career in the fire service, but an education in the fire service background. For those that don't know, Connecticut's pretty big with that. UNH was one of the schools that I looked at, and I was very jet set on going to UNH, still being able to stay home in Connecticut. What turned me off to staying in Connecticut was I wanted to spend a lot of time in the firehouse. And what ended up driving me to Maryland was the fact that we have, and a lot of places have, the college living program. And the college living program is what sold me into moving into Maryland, which for those that don't know, the college living program is you live in a firehouse, and every firehouse has a different set of rules that pertain to the live-in program. But Rockville, you live in the firehouse and you go to school full-time, or you have a job, and that is literally how they run the program. And for lack of better terms, long story short, the best way to explain it in simplest terms is you are helping the volunteer corporation put their rigs on the street, and they're providing you with a place to stay. That's the short and simplest way to navigate that. What worked for us in Rockville, and I'll let Chief Hine explain it a little bit more, is that Montgomery College, which is a community college in Rockville, has a very good fire science program. And it just happened to be that there is a number of volunteers, some who are not with us anymore, who were members of Rockville that also were instructors and teachers at the college. So what happened is we had a very good way of tracking people in, getting them in, and not just leaving them hanging. But when I moved down here, the first thing I did was see the firehouse, meet people, and then literally drive over to the college and walk the campus and meet people, meet the instructors over at the college. So that's what attracted me from Connecticut to Maryland, and then living in the firehouse. So, you know, there is a number of corporations in Maryland, not just Montgomery County, but Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Carroll County, Frederick County, Howard County. This is a common thing for us. And there's a lot of schools in Maryland that provide good fire science programs. Obviously, in Montgomery County, we have Montgomery College. In Prince George's County, we have the University of Maryland. And then a lot of the other counties have their community colleges with different programs. So that's the gist of how I made it to Maryland. Being a Connecticut boy, and for the record, I still am a Connecticut boy. I have a Connecticut tattoo on my arm, but that's what drove me to that's what drove me to Maryland from Connecticut.
Okay, I don't even know where to go from there. I will say this about Montgomery College, though: we used to call Montgomery College Harvard on the Pike back in the day,
or Yale on the rail.
Yale on the rail, but for members of the fire service who are more familiar with the University of New Haven, Montgomery County College has a storied past in the fire service. Instructors like Ted Jarbo, Francis Brannigan, anybody who's read the building instruction book, how many lives have that saved? It made a tremendous impact on my career. Both of those individuals were both college professors at Montgomery College. So it's a community college, but you get top-notch instructors from around the country. Chief Hind, do you want to explain a little bit about your perspective of the live-in program as a deputy chief of the Rockville Fire Department? When we were down there, they used to call us mercenaries, the volunteers.
Absolutely. We had a live-in patch for a little while. It said, dirty deeds done dirt cheap. You know, our live-in program at Rockville has been very robust for a long time. And, you know, as RJ said, and Frank, as you know, people come from all over the country to go to live-in programs in the Maryland area for the University of Maryland and for Montgomery College. Montgomery College is kind of a renowned institution when it comes to fire service and fire service management, emergency management. You know, it's just as good as any of the other big schools, and that brings a lot of people to our area. It's certainly a huge recruitment tool for us, having had so many folks such as Frank and others who have come down and gone through the program, and the program itself just having such good instructors. Our live-in program now has many members in it. We have folks that are going to University of Maryland. There's actually about 11 schools, big and small, within a 30-minute drive of the Rockville Volunteer Fire Department. That includes Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland, George Washington University, American University. So there's just a plethora of options. You know, most people think of a fire department live-in program and they think they're only going after a fire department curriculum. But we actually get folks in our area that come to go to these other schools, whether they're a member at Rockville or some of the other departments within Montgomery or PG County, and they're studying all sorts of curriculums, and they live in the firehouse and they get that experience because they either had a start in the fire service where they were from, or it's just something that interests them. And it takes them in all sorts of directions. And it's really an awesome part for us. You know, I've managed the live-in program at Rockville. I've been a live-in member. you know, one of the things that we do that really helps retain folks at Rockville is we do everything we can to help foster you throughout that timeline progression in your career, from going to school to getting hired with a career fire department, or if you're pursuing another path. We have plenty of people that have been through the process before you. So we want to help guide you and get you to where you want to be in that path to success.
You know, Chris and RJ, I'll say that, you know, I always just thought it was, you know, Frank hyping the program up and how good it was, you know, Frank being Frank. But what I found out a few years ago is we hired a member of my career department when I was a deputy chief of training that came through your program. He started in Connecticut as a volunteer and went through your program, and he was top notch. He came into our, you know, our agency, our department as a probie with knowledge, skills, and also experience at a much greater level than some of the members that were on the department that were there for a while. So it right then really showed me that wasn't Frank just, you know, hyping a program. He was hyping the program properly, because I was able to see firsthand the quality that was coming out of your program.
Well, part of that is Frank being Frank. But one of the driving things that sold me was, as a young man, 17, 18 years old in high school, when you look at the call volume, and everybody wants to be busy as a young person in the fire service, Rockville was running easily 10, 11, 12,000 calls a year, the firehouse. And on top of that, Rockville is not the busiest firehouse in Montgomery County. So, you know, that's the biggest thing that everybody wants is experience. Everybody wants to be able to run calls. Everybody wants to train. Everybody wants to meet people and build friendships and relationships that last forever. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I was looking for at a young age. And honestly, Rockville and a lot of these places around us are still running the amount of calls that we're running, which is what brands good people. I mean, obviously, when you're doing it right and you mess up, you have a chance to do it again and correct your wrongs. That's what makes you better each time. You know what I mean?
I think one of the things that RJ is right about is our call volume is huge. You know, in 2019, we ran somewhere just over 9,500 calls. And aside from the calls, the folks are still training every night in the firehouse. You know, these folks that live in the firehouse, and this kind of will segue into our standby program discussion a little bit later. Every night crew is doing some sort of training, whether it's hands-on or getting out the whiteboard or, you know, watching a video. There is a drill going on in our firehouse every night. So that, on top of that high call volume, really just pushes our folks to be better. They have to be better. It's just a requirement.
And I think it's as the ombudsman of the group, I think it would be important at this point to just provide a little bit more explanation about what it is we're talking about. We're all insiders, so we know about live-in programs, et cetera, et cetera. But we're on Facebook Live right now, which is a social media platform that I'm not on, but I hear many people are. And so there may be folks who don't understand what we mean by a live-in program. And just so folks know, the University of Notre Dame, I have a great friend who went through Notre Dame as a live-in firefighter, and it was a way for him to go to school there. And he, as a volunteer firefighter, that was his room and board. So he got his education there. Many of the greatest minds in the American Fire Service, Steve Kerber, for example, he's a great, I believe, a Maryland volunteer firefighter. His dad's a Maryland volunteer firefighter. And Steve loves the fire service, loves it more than anything in the world, but he's a scientist. So when these kinds of opportunities allow for people that have, like, they're multidimensional people. They're these true Renaissance people like Steve Kerber, like, you know, others that, and we all know those kinds of folks. So they can go to college and get their degrees, their advanced degrees, still doing firefighting that they love. And so people think that the volunteer fire service and the fire service in general, I mean, a buddy of mine from New York City was telling me the other day how many dentists and doctors and lawyers are New York City firefighters. And they're doing it because they love both of those things, right? Not exclusionary. You can love two things, right? And that doesn't apply to girlfriends or boyfriends out there. For those of us who are unmarried, keep those one at a time, or you'll get in trouble. But you you can love two career paths. You can love two, and you can put them together, right? Like if you're a great lawyer, you can help out firefighters who need lawyers. And occasionally we all need lawyers. If you're a dentist, you can be a, you can help, you could still be a great dentist and be a great volunteer firefighter. You can do anything and be a volunteer firefighter, and you can help and you can bring that skill set inside, right? And so these programs, these live-in programs, when you look at the cost of housing, and Chris, I had no idea. You said there are 13 universities within 30 minutes of the Rockland. You know, if you're a young person or if you're a parent right now, and you've got a child who's looking at one of those schools who also enjoys the volunteer fire service, there you go. There's an opportunity to maybe raise the next Steve Kerber. You know what I mean? To maybe raise the next, you know, Dan Majakowski or the next, you know, who knows? Because, you know, that's such a cool thing. And, you know, when you're, you know, to think about somebody going through someplace like, well, Notre Dame, because basically that's God's mom's school. I mean, how does it get any better than that? You know, and you're fighting fires at God's mom's school. That's pretty cool. That's why you can never root against Notre Dame, because you'd be rooting against God's mom. You can't root against them. It's against the law if you're a Catholic. You'll burn forever.
So and just to ground this a little bit, not everybody's going to be a Steve Kerber or a scientist. I mean, the most important person in my life besides my kids at one time was my driver. If your goal is to become a driver of the volunteer fire department or to become a driver of a career department and you want to go to community college, that's kind of that niche of Montgomery College. And then you have other kids that want to be engineers and scientists, and there's the niche of the University of Maryland, and it's all right there in Rockville. One of the other things that I'd like to bring up that I think is important that nobody really talks about from a live-in program that probably had the biggest impact upon me when I became a boss later and a leader was that throughout your career, whether it's in a volunteer or career department, it's kind of like linear. It's a ladder. You work for one boss, then you get another boss and you get another boss, and your career just kind of goes in stages. But when you're a live-in, you're working for four different bosses from the career department, and then at night, a different boss for each duty night. So what you get to see is it's all at the same time. It's like, it's what we all strive for: training, education, and experience all together. And besides just the experience of going to calls, you get the experience to see how you treat people with different personalities. How do you find ways to work with people? What works, what doesn't work? And it's really interesting to be kind of in that petri dish of the firehouse when you're working for different bosses, because all your good bosses are going to set their expectations. And where I lived, A shift's expectations were totally different than C shift's. And you had to adapt to those, and you got to see how those leadership styles worked. Chris Hines, you want to kind of parlay into that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, and while our live-in members, you know, they're coming and they're dealing with all those folks in the firehouse, that's helping build their management skills. I know oftentimes, and sometimes it results in the little bit we call the live-in syndrome with our members, is they're there every night. So they see all those leadership styles and they mold it all into their melting pot. And they've just become these natural born leaders most of the time. They're the people that at 5 o'clock when the duty night starts, if the shift officer hasn't walked through the door yet, they're immediately stepping up at the riding assignment board and working with the career officer, working with each shift night member to get them started, get them their riding assignments, taking charge of the firehouse until the shift leader shows up. And as time goes on, if you watch and if you look at the officers in our fire department right now, almost every single one of our fire officers and fire chiefs have been a live-in member with our department. And it's just, I mean, it's uncanny the ability that you, the leadership abilities you learn through being a live-in member. Like you said, Frank, your exposure to everybody, hopefully you can pick out the bad traits versus the good. And as you mold it all together, you come out on top.
I was gonna say the same thing too. I think the simplest term for what you both said is it culturizes you. And that's that's the biggest thing. When I, you know, we both lived in the firehouse. Living in the firehouse, I was talking about it this morning, actually, with some of the career guys there. When you put it in the grand scheme of things, you take one person, he has to learn three different career shifts. And in Rockville, we have 9 different duty nights. So obviously we have a duty night for each day of the week, but then we also have the weekend shifts. They have their own duty nights as well. So you have to get familiar with many different people, many different leadership styles, many different, not only leadership styles, but dinners. That was a big thing that we had to learn how to do, was deal with each person's dinner. Because when you live in a firehouse, if Monday night shift wants to do spaghetti, and then Tuesday night shift wants to do spaghetti, and then Wednesday night shift wants to do spaghetti, you see what I'm saying? So that was one of the biggest things we had to learn. It just it culturizes you all the way around. You know what I mean? Just many different, not only leadership styles, but just personalities as well.
Let's be clear. It's not spaghetti every night, right, RJ? It was taco salad.
Yeah, that was taco salad. Actually, I hate spaghetti now because of that.
So for departments that are out there that are listening today, or, you know, watching live or going to watch this in the recorded version, that do not have a live-in program and that are clearly seeing some of the benefits of that, how would a department get started based on your experience of what you're doing? Where can departments go? And I would also like, maybe you could finish that with giving them some resources or point them to, you know, individual contacts and how to reach them. So if you have a department that really wants to dive in and start looking at this, how would they start going about that?
So you want to go, Chris, or you want me to go?
Yeah. I mean, PJ, that's a great idea. I've been to plenty of fire departments. You know, as you go around and you visit with folks, whether you're training or just on vacation, talking to guys, not every volunteer fire department has a live-in program. Ocean City, Maryland, for instance, for a long time did not have a live-in program, in a place where people come to live seasonally and they could capitalize on that. And I believe now they do. Bethany Beach has a big live-in program. You know, it's really just a start of coming up with what your rules and regulations are going to be, having the appropriate facilities in your building. I know back in the 60s when our firehouse was built, it was a dorm style bunk room, you know, gen pop bunk room that our guys lived in. And at the time, the bunk room was mainly for live-in members. As time evolved, the bunk room became more for standby members and there were less live-in members. And now we're back to a middle ground. We have a live-in bunk room for live-ins. And then we have the gen pop bunk room for the shift workers and the one night a week folks. So you have to have the appropriate facilities. That's going to lead towards retention of your live-in members 100%. But you come up with a set of guidelines. For instance, at Rockville, our folks are required to do 4 shifts a week. They have to move up at a certain pace, higher than a normal member would. And we have all that prescribed in a policy and with a live-in agreement that the folks review. We set a performance plan for them. Those are all documents that I know Rockville would be happy to share with any department that's interested in developing a live-in program. And I know that some places, you know, we'll get into the conversation about the standby program. Some people think, well, we just couldn't accomplish a standby program, but you could accomplish a live-in program. If you have enough folks that live in at the firehouse where they can get the first rig on the street, if you're in small town America, and they can get that first rig on the street within 30 to 60 seconds when there's a house fire and the other folks are coming from home, getting the next rigs out or meeting them at the scene, your turnout times are going to decrease rapidly. And that's really where the live-in program started at Rockville. It was the first piece out the door. Everybody else was coming from home, getting the second and third piece out. So you can start small and then you can scale it however large you want.
Jump in, Bobby.
So, and generally speaking, one of the things I think is important to point out too, that we were talking about the Maryland area, many of those schools that Chris listed are institutions of higher education. But remember, if you want to start this program, every community has a trade school, you know, or if your community does have a trade school, those community colleges where people are going through a trades education, those are also other places where people who are doing that activity might want to do the live-in program. I just had a question for Chris and RJ in particular in regards to live-in programs. Is it generally speaking reserved only for folks who are doing educational work, or do you have live-ins that are pursuing other things besides maybe a trades education or college education?
We get live-in members from both external coming in, like RJ and Frank coming down from Connecticut, or the folks that come from all over the country. But we also bring live-in members in from within the local community. So we have a live-in program that's made up of both. We call them student live-ins. The requirements are really not much different. So, you know, anybody can be a live-in. Our requirements are a little bit different for those coming from within side the department. If you're a, you know, grew up in Rockville and you join, we typically want you to get your fire one or two class done and your EMT done before we live in the bunk room, so that you're actually able to rapidly fulfill minimum staffing. But anybody can live in the bunk room. Like you were talking about earlier, Bobby, we'll take, you know, anybody. We have members from all walks of life in our department doing all sorts of things. And we wouldn't exclude anybody from that.
Yeah, to jump on what Chris said and also answer Chief Norwood's question, I think the biggest thing is, I think we have seen a lot of corporations in this area start with just being regular fire departments and build live-in programs to many different ways. But I think the best thing you can do is just remember the one saying from Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. And that is like the biggest thing that you can possibly do. So I think the best thing you can do first is to start by looking at what the makeup of the firehouse is. So like, what is, what keeps people coming, right? Is it the fact that they're getting good drills? Is it the fact that they're getting calls? Or is it the fact that we're doing a dinner that brings everybody together? Look at what the makeup is and what's bringing the people together. And then I think once you figure out what it is that's bringing the people together, we need to consistently do that, because if that's what's bringing people together, then it's working, right? So then at the end of that, if you look at what the makeup of the personnel are, and I'm talking age-wise, right? Most of any fire service, any place you go now, the age is starting to get younger and younger. And I can tell you just from experience, and I think all of us would agree with this, is when you are young, you made a decision that you wanted to join the fire department. There was a reason that made you want to join. That's something that drove you. You're going to continue to get that energy from training. And I know this sounds very, very cliche-ish, but when you're training and you're consistently training, are people going to want to keep coming to get more? So if you start building out a program where people are coming and they're getting good training and they left feeling accomplished and they actually learned something, they're going to come back again. So I think that when you start in that avenue of, one, what's bringing the people together, what's the makeup of the people, and we're giving them training, you start consistently building that out. What ends up happening is you get people consistently coming around. And then what happens is people consistently come around, they don't want to leave. So once they don't want to leave, now you start getting, you know, people from that firehouse to start building bonds and building groups. And then at that point in time, it's just a matter of the facilities itself. What can we do to accommodate the amount of people that we have? I know in Montgomery County, there's been a bunch of different firehouses that built onto their firehouse to accommodate the amount of people that were coming in that were wanting to live in the firehouse. Some even went as far as to have trailers attached to the building so that they can outfit beds and living quarters for the amount of live-ins that were coming through. So I think those are like the biggest things that I would do to answer to Chief Norwood's question about how do we build a program and where do we go with it?
Well, RJ and Christopher don't know this yet, but they will be writing an article for Fire Engineering that's going to break down all the individual components of a live-in program. And I don't want to speak for Bobby Halton, but I'll take a little liberty here. I think it'd be a great idea because there's a lot of interest on Facebook. And it also doesn't have to be built around a school system. We all go through life and people ebb and flow through life. And there's been plenty of people who got divorced that needed a place to stay, that were dedicated volunteers to get that piece out, that had a place to live, at least when I was down there. And I'm sure that continues today. The fire department always helps everybody out. It is a true brotherhood. One thing right before we move to duty nights that I want you guys to both weigh in on is one of the reasons why I was so proud to be a volunteer and in Montgomery County, Maryland, and a live-in, is that unlike other places where it was just, if you want to be an officer, it was who bought the most beer at the softball night, the training standards in Rockville, if you want to be a command officer in Rockville, you'll be commanding volunteers and you'll be commanding career firefighters as well, because they go through the same standards and certification. Can you speak to that? And because the one thing that holds it all together, as RJ said, is the training and the consistency of training and the fact that you guys almost seamlessly work with the career department in ensuring everybody has the proper qualifications. Let's start with RJ and then we'll move to Chief Hine. You're muted.
Yeah. So, I mean, for lack of better terms, I think that when we look at what brought us together in Rockville, it was obviously the program. I think that how Rockville established where you go, we started with the living program. So one of the biggest things that we did was we said, all right, if you're going to live in a firehouse, you need to meet X, Y, Z training requirements over so much time. So that was kind of like your way. I like to use the short words, how you paid your rent, essentially. And you know, you had the move ups. So, you know, you had to become an aide on the ambulance. You had to drive the ambulance. And you had so much time that you needed to become a third on the engine. So much time you needed to become a third on the truck. So much time you need to become a third on the squad. And then start the whole driving process. You know, then you start driving. Honestly, when you live in the firehouse, it's kind of like you see what the department's needs are. So you can say, you know, I know that this department, we need heavy apparatus drivers. So, you know, it's kind of like, hey, I want to do this so I can help more. And then you see like, hey, the need is we need officers. Well, you know, then you start taking the classes so you can help more. I think when you're there every day, you can see what the need is and you can see where the department struggles. You know, and when I lived at the firehouse, we struggled between 5 and 6 with the ambulance till the EMS people got in from work and whatever. So a lot of the live-ins, we had to make sure that the ambulance got put on the street. And again, that's how we paid our rent. You know, you have to do some of the things that you don't want to do in order to continue to live where you want to live. I don't know. I think the easiest way to say it is you can make this job as easy or as hard as you want it. But I can tell you that the resources have always been available, which is one thing that I've liked about Montgomery County. The amount of classes that we can take at our disposal, which is easy. It's just nothing more than signing up and showing up. And then the stuff that we do in house, you know, God rest his soul, Scott Emmons, who was a good friend of yours. He made sure that we did things in house every day. I mean, and then we just not too long ago put on a big truck and squad training for the entire department and the surrounding departments to come and get training. So I think to answer your question, Frank, it's what you make it, you know. And I think not just talking about Maryland, because I've been to a lot of different places and I've seen a lot of different things, and I come from the same state you guys come from. The things are out there. It's just a matter of how do we get the people to get into it? How do we motivate the people to want to do it? And what's the process? You know what I mean? Some processes are a little harder than others, but I think for the most part, the American Fire Service, the process is there. It's just a matter of how do we make it easier for some of the people.
Thank you, Chris. Now, one thing that we see is it's tough to, you know, respond from home. You got the liability of a lot of volunteers out there responding from home. There's also demands from work have never been more because people are working around the clock now, it seems, with, you know, being tied in with their phone and their computer. And also kids sports aren't what it used to be. It used to be when I was a kid and you played baseball, you had one practice and one game. Now they're playing baseball every night. And it seems that Rockville Fire Department came up with an answer for that. And that was the duty night, was to take the volunteers and essentially make it like a career job one night a week to serve in the firehouse and be responsible and sleep over in the firehouse to be ready to respond. And I think that's one of the things that, and I'll, you know, you're going to put it in your words, but I think it's one of the things that saved the volunteer fire service, because Rockville's too busy to have people try to respond from home. And this kind of invigorated the fire service to know, hey, I'm on Monday night crew. Every Monday night, I'm coming to the firehouse and I can do more, but I'm committing to be there every Monday night. And most employers that I've talked to over the years, they liked it because there was some consistency. So they knew that the person might get caught on a call the night before or school. Can you speak to that? And again, it was your father who was one of the individuals that was instrumental of bringing Duty Nights to Rockville. And that's a legacy that he should always be remembered for. Go ahead, Chief.
Absolutely. Thank you, Frank. And you know, the standby program for Rockville, it came about in 1989 and 1990 when my father was the fire chief the first time. He got all the officers together and he said, you know, I'm seeing this trend in our county of call volume increasing, the number of calls that our headquarters station was responding to, because Rockville is a four station department. So he said, I really think we need to pull people. We're supposed to guarantee an engine, a ladder truck, a heavy rescue squad, a BLS and ALS ambulance out of station three at all times. Other stations in the county weren't required to to get all their services out. So he pulled people in with the other officers, and they made the decision that they were going to establish this standby program where, as you said, one night a week, didn't matter which station was your home station, you were going to come to station three, our headquarters station, our busiest station, and do your one duty night. And then your other time, if you wanted to come in and spend time at your own station, you could do that. In the end, we did lose some people in the beginning. And that's the one thing I'll tell people that are looking at doing a standby program is you can't be afraid. And I've heard this as I've talked to other chiefs in our area. They're afraid to institute a standby program requiring people to show up who are volunteers because they're worried they're going to lose them. You may lose a percentage of your membership by doing this, but in the end, all the new members that come in, it's all they're going to know. And you start to strengthen your department, and it's almost a retention tool because people know what to expect. The one thing that I've seen in a lot of places that don't have standby programs, or even in the places that have them and don't enforce them, is once somebody kind of slides off the radar and they're not showing up, it's really easy to not show up. So if you have this requirement in place and it becomes this regular thing, like you said, Frank, you show up every Monday and you know that that's your routine, it's good for you, it's good for your family, they know what to expect, your employers, because you can just have that relationship, that understanding with all those folks that this is what you're doing. You know, it kind of broadens out. We've had a number of different iterations of the standby program in Rockville because it's always tough doing things like staffing the weekend. So we started out where you did a roving crew on Saturday nights, where this week, Monday night would stand duty on a Saturday night. Next week, Tuesday night would do the Saturday night, and the roving crew would fill in your weeknight. Some people like that. You know, we're actually now at a point where a weeknight shift does a 24-hour shift on the Saturday. And folks like it because they might do their one night a week on a Tuesday night, but on Saturday they come and they get to spend the whole day at the firehouse. And that gives them a lot more opportunity to do training in the station, whether they're going out on the air, things like that, or the classes like RJ said that we put on where we do our truck and our squad weekend that just brings people to the firehouse in droves. So it's really been a successful thing for us. And like I said, the one thing that people can't be afraid of is to lose a few people in the beginning of that process only to make your department stronger. And maybe you can find a way to have an associate membership program or something where, you know, if you meet certain requirements, you're a driver or you're an officer, that you can do a little bit less because you've done time and grade or achieved certain qualifications. Those are all things that folks can think of. I know another thing, another standby program that works, again, in a smaller setting, our sister city fire department in Pinneberg, Germany, they have a standby program where they have one person who lives in the fire station who's the responsible driver, and then they have other people that are responsible to come to the station from home. So even if they're not at the firehouse on a duty night, they know that tonight's my duty night. When the pager goes off, these five or six people are going to show up. They don't leave it to chance. They guarantee who's going to show up, even though they're not in the station. So that's another twist on it.
I think this is some great information. And Chris and RJ, I'm going to ask you both if after the show today, if you can go to the Fire Engineering Facebook page, because there's a lot of comments and questions in there. And we're not going to have time to get to all of them today. So I'm hoping that for those that are listening today and asking those questions, you can get back to them with some really good quality information. But there are a few on there that I'm going to just throw your way. I think I got like three or four that I just want to bring up. So the first one is revolving any issues with wage and hour boards covering expenses versus the hourly pay for livings?
So for Rockville, we don't do an hourly wage. Our folks live there for free. Like RJ said, that's their rent. They're providing their rent by being in the firehouse and guaranteeing staffing. Some of the other benefits that they get, though, are each night our duty crews provide dinner, and that's provided by the fire department. So whether they're cooking a meal or they're catering something in, it's essentially a free dinner for our live-in members, for all of our volunteers. There's tuition reimbursement available to all those members. And through the Length of Service Awards program in the county, there is an annual stipend of a couple hundred dollars that all of our members get, but the stipend is increased if you max out in all the categories. So obviously all of our live-ins who are there four nights a week, they're going to max out in those categories. I hope that answers the question.
Okay. If not, I'll ask the follower that posted that comment just to post a follow-up to that. Hopefully yourself or RJ can get to that at some point. Another question here, which I think you kind of touched on already, but I'd like to kind of go back to it. What's the biggest obstacle and how do you overcome it?
Yeah. So I saw that question online, and RJ can touch on this a little bit too, but the biggest obstacle in recruiting live-ins for us is our social media and our website presence. Our department is a lot of people strong, but we are very busy in terms of call volume. And something that we've never really been good at is snapping a picture on the call or getting a video. You know, we just go and we're doing the job, and then we think about it afterwards and go, oh, we should have done that. So we're having a hard time keeping up with smaller departments who are doing very well with these media blitzes or hiring recruiters and things of that nature. And that's one of the things that we're looking forward to hopefully doing in the future and getting ourselves back out there. RJ, what do you think?
Yeah, Chief Norwood, I would echo what Chris is saying. And that is our biggest hurdle. But unfortunately, we have to work on that to get better. But a lot of these younger people that want to get into fire service, they're following a lot of these sites, whether it's on Facebook or Instagram or whatever social media sites are, they're following them. And that's how they make the decision about where they want to go, is they're looking at the content of who seems busy or what's going on. And that's what sells. I mean, to be honest with you, our generations now want information. They want it quick and fast and what seems to spark their interest. We struggle with the social media aspect of it just because we have multiple people coming in every night of the week in different areas. I think as far as recruiting live-ins goes, we do a decent job. We can always do better, but that's why we've started within the last, obviously COVID hit, but prior to that, we was trying to get to trade shows and trying to help, you know, set up booths at these different things so people can see. A lot of time the program speaks for itself. When you look at the live-ins or the makeup of the live-ins, when you have two people from Connecticut, two people from Jersey, three from Maryland, and, you know, people look to be successful in their own, back in their hometowns. So kind of, it does kind of sell itself a little bit. And if you look at when Frank started, right, how many people from Connecticut have since been here, and how many people, you know, I think it's been an unwritten rule that the Connecticut people always look out for the Connecticut people. And that's why we keep bringing more Connecticut people down. Hey, that's what I was taught when I first got picked up to come down here. And that's been the rule ever since, you know?
Yeah,
I got to have so many Connecticut people.
One thing I think we can add to the recruitment of live-ins too is you can do all the social media blitz and the trade show booths, set them up. The one thing that we do is we require anybody that's interested in our live-in program to come and do a weekend visit at the fire station. And like RJ said, that's where it speaks volumes. They get to know the people in the firehouse. They're going to see a lot of them because the weekend crews are coming through and the career folks. And that's when they really see what's going on inside Rockville VFD, the call volume, the people, the living conditions. You can't portray all those things through social media or in a trade show. They have to see it firsthand, see that the college is only a half mile away. And, you know, the next door, there's a big town center with nightlife and, you know, and a public library and a gym that they're not amenities of the firehouse, but they're a stone's throw out the back door.
You know, I think this is a great conversation, and I'm trying to keep up with everything going on in the Facebook chat. We normally don't get this much conversation in the chat. So it really shows me that, you know, Frank kind of hit the nail on the head here. Is I would ask that you guys go back to the Facebook chat after this is over and look through some of this stuff. But I would really encourage you to write an article on this, on how to build a program as successful as you have done, and work with Chief Halton to get that done, and Frank, because there's obviously a lot of interest in this. And like I said, 83% of the volunteers in Connecticut are volunteers. So I'm sure there's plenty of departments. I know one comment from a local department, Derby, Connecticut, they have a small live-in program with UNH that they've had for years, something that I was unaware of, and that's only about 20 minutes from my home. So I look forward to more conversations on this as well as the article. I know Chief Halton has something. We'll go to Chief, and then we'll go back to Frank.
I think that Christopher's earlier comment was probably the greatest thing I've ever heard on a Hump Day Hangout ever, because it was probably the truest comment I've ever heard. We don't do a lot of social media because we're actually fighting fires and running calls, and we don't mess around with that stuff when we're working, which I think is really important. I mean, I think that really speaks volumes to how focused that they're so focused on the mission that they're focused on the mission. They're there serving the people in that county specifically. And I am so grateful to hear that you've got a lousy social media presence because you're focused on doing the job. Because a lot of people think social media is the real world, and it's not. It's not. If you think Twitter and Facebook is the real world, get a life. Get out of the basement. Go get a job, or you know, get a life, because it's not the real world. And Christopher just said it very well. The biggest sell for this program is you go and spend a weekend with those people. And then you not only get good fits because they want to be there and you want them to be there, but they get to see what it's really all about, and not somebody's dinner in a restaurant and look at me. Somebody sent me an article the other day about the self-licking ice cream cone, which I thought was hysterical. And if you think about a self-licking ice cream cone, right? And his whole story was about how that's social media. You got people who are, you know, it's basically, you know, and here we are in social media talking about social media. So, but great comment. And it made my heart sore. There was one other question that was very interesting to me that I saw on the comment section here on the screen. Dean, it wasn't Dean, it was someone else. It was it was three or four first names. John Vincent Ryan Buchan said that they're building a station right now and they're planning on live-ins. Is there any must-have that you guys could recommend that you know, if you were building a station all over again, you'd say, oh, we got to have this. Do you have anything you could share with John about what you'd absolutely want to build into the station beforehand?
100%, John. And I saw Rockville picked up and responded on Facebook to that a little bit, but you really got to think about those living quarters. We touched on that a little bit ago. It's something that, like I said, when Rockville Station was first built in the 60s, they had a bunk room. It was the living quarters, and it was just single bunk beds for a bunch of dudes living in the firehouse. We've gone back now and we actually built single and double dorm rooms in our meeting room, and we have our meetings off site so that we have better living quarters for those members. And that's a huge key, right? I know Bethany Beach, I've seen their firehouse. They have a private wing with a kitchen and everything for their live-ins, and it's phenomenal. So those are the things you really have to think about, is the amenities for those folks, because it is going to be their home. There has to be a way that they can isolate themselves when it's appropriate, because we don't want you to isolate yourselves all the time. How are you going to get that training and that experience if you're hiding in your room playing video games? But, you know, it's also, especially, I mean, the last years have proven extremely tough for our folks in the firehouse, because they're living in the firehouse through COVID, when everybody's supposed to be wearing masks and we're sanitizing constantly and all these things going on. So them being able to have their private sanctuary was a huge ordeal, and protecting that for them.
I think the other thing, and this is the training side of me talking, is props. If you have props that gives them something to do. I think we all know, and everybody watching know, is idle hands are the worst thing for us in the firehouse. But when you have a forcible entry prop, or you have a place where they can stretch lines and, you know, rope towers and all these different things where they can consistently do things, I think that helps keep people engaged. When I lived in the firehouse, we would consistently take stuff off the rig and run scenarios or just do things. And when people feel like they're not inconveniencing anybody, where, hey, if we get a call, we got to put all this stuff back on the rig. I think being able to have a stationary area, and Rockville is actually working on this now, having a stationary area and items where you can do training and not affect the flow of the firehouse, that helps big time.
That's great. I want to go around the horn here and close it up today. And we really look forward to you guys putting out an article. We'll do a radio show on this as well. Great topic. I did get a question about the two hatters because we put that out. And I just want to let everybody know out there that the unions don't have the bat anymore. The bat used to be that your job was at risk if you wanted to volunteer for the community. The fact is, most of us got our start in the volunteer department, and the career department tends to benefit when somebody volunteers because they get training that they bring to that career department. And the volunteer department tends to benefit from the experience and some of the training that the career member brings. And I just go to Connecticut yesterday or the day before, they had a individual with his arm stuck in a pasta machine, an industrial pasta machine. It took 3 hours to extricate this individual out of the machine and fly him to definitive care. It just happened. This is a small town, but the incident commander for that call happened to be a captain, a rescue boss in New Haven on the heavy rescue, who happened to be home that day giving back to his community. So the unions don't have a bat anymore since the Janus decision. And if anybody ever gives you a problem that says that you can't volunteer, look to see if they drive a foreign car. Look to see if they got a part-time non-union electrical job, landscaper, whatever it is. And if you still got a problem, you can call me, because they can't compel you to pay dues if you don't want to. So that stick is gone. So everybody knows how to get a hold of me. I know a good lawyer too. Bobby, you want to say the last word for the day?
Yeah, let me just say that many of the things that were during my generation deemed necessary are not deemed necessary now. And we've got great new folks. Congratulations to Ed Kelly. He's bringing in a brand new team to the IAFF. And I know Ed and the folks there are more concerned about the citizens of this country and the welfare and health of the firefighters than they are about idiosyncratic rules and behaviors from the past that may or may not really benefit the community. If there's anything about Ed Kelly that I can say unequivocally, he puts the health and welfare of the people that his people serve and his people ahead of everything else. And so, you know, how he works that through that incredibly complicated system that he's now in charge of remains to be seen. And I'm not speaking for Ed, but Eddie's a wonderful guy, and he's put together a wonderful team, and there's always been wonderful people there. And a lot of what we inherit, we sometimes think we can't, you know, mess with or change, you know, the sacred cows, if you will. And those things are changing all the time. So hopefully, you know, the silliness between the two hatter thing goes away. And it's always been interesting to me. I was a two hatter. John Norman was a two hatter. John Salka was a two hatter. And I can't remember anybody threatening John Salka. I'm just going to throw that out there. So a lot of great firefighters, you know, were able to be career and volunteer at the same time. And back to my original point, we're all volunteers. Sometimes you get paid for it and sometimes you don't. And so, but nobody said you have to be a firefighter anywhere that I know of in this country. So I'll leave it at that. But I do want to say thank you to RJ and Chris. This was wonderful. And I would also say to RJ and Chris that the call for presentations for FDIC in April of 2022 would very much like to see a proposal on developing a live-in program, because to my recollection, in the last 15, 16 years, we haven't done that class. So that would make for a great class. And I know folks would be very interested in it. So, you know, creating, maintaining, managing a live-in program would be a wonderful, not wonderful article, wonderful class at FDIC. So I would highly, great webcast. I would highly recommend you guys, you know, keep massaging this idea with your other contacts that do it. To everybody on Facebook who joined us with the great questions, thank you so much for doing that. Frank and PJ, thank you as always for allowing me to sit in. I always appreciate your kindness. And our producer, Pete, thank you so much. To everybody in Spring Valley, I don't know, words can't describe how deeply saddened we all are for you. And we really are praying for you. And if there's anything that fire engineering or anybody in this group can do to help, please just reach us through whatever means you can. And I know that every person on this call and everybody on this call knows will move heaven and earth to try to help you get through this most incredibly difficult time. So on behalf of all of us, you know, to the family and friends of Jared, our thoughts and prayers are with you. And we hope that you find comfort in this incredibly difficult time. So thank you all for being here with us today. Thank you for spending your time and your energy. RJ and Chris, thank you to Frank for throwing you under the bus. and thank you all for joining with us today on Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout.
Thanks for having us, Chief. It was good seeing you.
Glad to be here.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.